This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, we'll talk with Fred Minnick about his new bourbon tasting guide. Starting us off this afternoon, in April 1990, an art exhibit opened in Cincinnati that sparked immediate controversy, placed the Contemporary Arts Center on a national stage, and ignited a legal battle over the First Amendment. Here to discuss that exhibit, Robert Mapplethorpe, The Perfect Moment, and to give us a preview of upcoming events commemorating the 25th anniversary of the CAC exhibit, our Contemporary Arts Center director, Raphael Plato, and curator, Stephen Maticio, and Photo Focus artistic director and curator, Kevin Moore. You can join our conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Kevin, Stephen, and Raffaella, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Oh, pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kevin, can you start us off by telling us, who was Robert Mapplethorpe? What kind of artwork was he doing?
He was a photographer, and he was having a very successful career building throughout the 1980s until he died of AIDS around 1988. He had a couple of big museum exhibitions, one at the Whitney Museum, and then one that was touring the U.S. To various cities that came to the CAC in 1990, and that's the show that caused so much controversy.
Why was his work controversial? I mean, what was he doing that caused this, Kevin?
In some ways, he was a very conservative photographer. His pictures are very sort of traditional portraits of celebrities and people, but he was also very provocative in some ways, and he had an interest in the New York underground, the sadomasochistic sex scene, which was alive during the late 1970s. He did what a lot of photographers do. He went out and photographed the world that he was interested in, and he mixed that in with his very traditional standard portraits of celebrities, and that's what caused the stir. So there's an edge of his work that's very traditional and very easy to digest, and there's another part that's intentionally provocative.
Now, he wasn't just doing this to be gratuitous, though. He was trying to make a point with his work, correct?
Well, I think he was doing what a lot of photographers throughout history have done. They photograph their world. They photograph what they know and what interests them and excites them. It's no different than Cartier-Bresson photographing politics or street life in Paris, but, you know, it just happened that this was his world. This is what he was interested in.
Stephen, talk some about the controversy that erupted in Cincinnati when the exhibit came here in 1990.
Yeah, and I think I just wanted to add to Kevin's point that Mapplethorpe filtered his worldview through some of his influences. He sort of drew upon a lot of his personal background, and so he was raised as a Catholic, very religious, and he also had an affinity towards classical art, the Greco-Roman sculpture. And so when we look at his work, it's being filtered through this very traditional classical lens that Kevin pointed out, but he's wrestling with some very provocative, very challenging subject matter. And I think that dichotomy of Mapplethorpe's work has kept him so relevant and so kind of enigmatic in a lot of ways, because you can read very different things in his work. And I think, like you mentioned, the exhibition in Cincinnati brings these two things together. And so there's 150 photographs, and some of them are these beautiful, kind of very still photographs of flowers and of celebrities and of nudes and a lot of very classical subject matter in the field of photography. But then there are seven photographs that ultimately get prosecuted that sort of raise the ire and the controversy of Simon Leese and the Citizens for Community Values. This sort of maelstrom starts to assemble around the exhibition, and ultimately the director, Dennis Barry, and the institution are indicted on charges of obscenity.
Raffaella, that was the first time that ever happened to a museum and a director, wasn't it?
That was the first time ever in the history of the United States that a museum director and the institution were prosecuted based on criminal charges.
Well, was CAC expecting this kind of thing when it brought the exhibit in?
I don't think that the Contemporary Art Center expected it. I know that Dennis Barry consulted with the board very carefully if they should bring the show. Dennis presented the material to the board, but, you know, because of the mission of the Contemporary Art Center, of course, everybody decided to move forward. And you might remember, Mark, that the exhibition was mounted successfully in Philadelphia at the Institute of Contemporary Art. Then it moved on to Chicago to the Museum of Contemporary Art. And then the Corcoran canceled the show because there was a lot of, I think, congressional pressure to do so. And the director unfortunately succumbed to that pressure. She didn't want to take the risk to move forward. And she was probably very worried about the NEA funding of her institution. And, you know, the cultural climate at the time was, you know, pretty heightened around any kind of material that was sexually explicit or had materials in it that particular groups in within the society found offensive. So Jesse Helms and others obviously fought a very fierce fight against the National Endowment of the Arts. And so the Corcoran Gallery canceled the exhibition, but there was another more alternative art space in Washington, Washington Project for the Arts, who then decided to mount the exhibition. And I think went forward without any particular, I mean, definitely without criminal charges. There were a lot of artists, activists that protested that the show was canceled at the Corcoran, that there are these very powerful images of the exhibition being projected on the walls, on the exterior walls at the, of the Corcoran Gallery. And then the exhibition went on to, I think, the Hartforth, Athenaeum, and one other at the, it was also at the University Art Museum in Berkeley. And it really went off without a hitch. And then it came to Cincinnati. And, you know, obviously, before the exhibition even opened, it was closed for a moment for police to videotape the exhibition. And then the criminal charges were being posed. So
everything goes fine in other places. A few
yes.
places canceled, but for the most part, everything's going
one
fine in other
canceled.
Places.
One place canceled, yeah. It was fine everywhere else. And, you know.
Then it comes here and
yeah,
it erupts.
It erupts. And then what's really interesting is that the show moved from Cincinnati to Boston, and there was a really consolidated front of art institutions and politicians who said that, you know, the ICA in Boston, because it is a museum, can mount basically whatever they want to mount, and everybody is in support of it. So there were a few little teeny tiny protests in Boston on both sides of the coin, but it went off again very smoothly, and the exhibition, just as in the, all the other places, had record attendance. So it was really only in Cincinnati that that kind of eruption and conflict occurred.
Kevin, if I remember right, too, CAC at the time actually had the photos set off in another area with a warning sign, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So that was something the CAC did specifically. They put them in a case, so they weren't even on the wall. So mm-hmm. if you walked into the room, you couldn't accidentally see them. You had to walk up and lean over the case to intentionally look at them. But as I've heard from reports at the time, that wall, that room of photographs, the XYZ portfolio, it was called, that was the room everyone was crowding to get into. There were sometimes like an hour-long wait to get into that room to see those pictures.
Stephen, how does the trial end up? It goes to trial, and what happens?
Yeah, and so thankfully there's a lot of debate back and forth. They're bringing in expert witnesses on both sides. There's one very famous testimony, a woman named Judith Reisman, who tries to find satanic properties in Mapplethorpe's work. But then there are a number of very prominent museum directors that are brought in to support Mapplethorpe and the artistic integrity of the work and of the exhibition. And I think that ultimately the jury was upset that seven of the photographs were removed from the context of the larger exhibition, which was 150 photographs, but really they were only being shown seven mm-hmm. that were the most provocative. And so I think a lot of factors started to work in the favor of Dennis and the CAC, and he's ultimately acquitted 2 hours after the jury convenes. And it's this triumphant...
The exhibition had been closed for several months before the trial even happened, mm-hmm. and so there was one legal point, which was that the defense wanted to argue that the work of art was the total exhibition as a whole. You couldn't mm-hmm. single out mm-hmm. the seven pictures, but the judge ruled against that, and so the jury was only confronted with those seven pictures. But I think I would imagine that most of those people in their spare time had sort of researched and found other pictures or knew that there were other kinds of pictures, such as flowers and portraits.
So ultimately, the jury, though, even it says even the pictures that were in question were had artistic value, and thus mm-hmm. they're not obscene.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we can sit here 25 years later and we can say that that battle was won, but the war is not over in a lot of ways, that we are still having very rigorous debates about freedom of expression and censorship and the politics of what is seen and by whom. And so this is an ongoing issue and debate, which I think makes Mapplethorpe all the more relevant and all the more timely today.
Mm-hmm. Now, was the exhibit, the remainder of the exhibit, open while the trial was going on, though?
Mm-hmm. So the exhibition was open from March through the end of April, and the trial was in September. So the exhibition was open for the entire duration of, you know, the time it was scheduled for. After the indictment, and then the exhibition moved on. It moved to other institutions, and then the trial happened, you know, many, many months later, as Kevin pointed out earlier.
But as you were saying, Raffaella, there was a different climate back in the early 90s. You had AIDS becoming a big issue. The attitudes towards LGBTQ rights and issues were totally different back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Cincinnati was a very particular city because, you know, there were no adult bookstores. There were no
strip clubs.
Yeah. I mean, Cincinnati had nothing of that. And so I think it was a very particular breeding ground for the discourse and the discussion that happened around Mapplethorpe. They were a very strong family value association that put a lot of pressure on funders and the board members of the Contemporary Arts Center. You know, obviously there was a larger national debate around, you know, the culture wars of the 90s with Jesse Helms attacking the NEA. And Jesse Helms actually recommended an amendment to the NEA of what should be supported with
Senator Helms, yes.
Yes, and that didn't go through. I think the Senate approved, but then the House of Representatives didn't approve. I mean, he wanted to really be very, very limiting in what American tax dollars should support, the kind of art it should support. And so I think it was a particular climate in the country. You know, I didn't live here, but everything that I've read and what I've heard when I was still living in Germany points to that reality.
What kind of crowds did the exhibit draw?
The exhibition drew quite a crowd, about 81,000 visitors.
I think it's still our highest ever attended
exhibition.
Within
6 weeks. Yeah. So as you can see, there were a lot of people who wanted to see the exhibition and wanted to make or shape their own opinion about Mapplethorpe's artistic output. And I think it speaks to the people of the United States that, you know, they want to decide for themselves what they want to see or what they perhaps decide not to see. But, it drew a big crowd, the exhibition here in Cincinnati, actually everywhere.
We will continue our conversation about Mapplethorpe 25 years later, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. It's the 25th anniversary of an art exhibit that landed Cincinnati in the national spotlight. Here to discuss that exhibit, Robert Mapplethorpe, The Perfect Moment, and to give us a preview of upcoming events commemorating the 25th anniversary of the CAC exhibit, our Contemporary Arts Center Director Raffaella Plato and Curator Stephen Maticio and Photo Focus Artistic Director and Curator Kevin Moore. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And this was, Stephen, a major victory for Dennis Berry and the CAC to be acquitted in this, but it was costly, wasn't it? I mean, how much did this end up costing CAC?
Yeah, like I'm starting to dig through the archives and seeing all of the various court documents and all of the trial notes and against some of the legal costs. And, you know, we've heard some competing stories of exactly, but it was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so after the...
Which back in 1990 was a lot of money.
Was very significant.
Yeah. Yes.
And so afterwards, you know, after the victory was won, there was quite a bit of a legal defense fund fundraising or development campaign and it was actually very, very successful because people wanted to support. They really felt like this was a victorious moment and that we couldn't see the CAC suffer or sort of limp along after this momentous moment. And so they were very active in getting people. And like I'm right now sifting through hundreds, almost 1,000 letters. And they are just very, very provocative and very pointed, both for or against. You know, the voices of indictment were equal to the voices of liberty in this city. And I think that that's why it speaks, that it has a particular regional resonance that we really want to bring out, you know, both through the symposium as well as in the succeeding exhibition that will follow.
Well, remember, too, that it cost the county taxpayers a lot of money as to indict. And one of the great ironies of the whole thing is that it started over taxpayer money going to fund exhibitions some people thought of as obscene. But to prosecute the CAC and Dennis Berry, it cost a lot of money. And there were people on the prosecution side who wanted to pull out even before it happened just to not waste that money. Mm-hmm.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Barbara in Walnut Hills. Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
I wanted to tell you that the night that exhibit opened, I was there. My spouse and I were both went down to the exhibit, and we thought we would just get to walk in and see it. We knew we would have to buy a pass, not a pass, but a membership at the time. We got there, the block was in the equivalent of three, the line was the equivalent of three blocks long just to get into the exhibit. It was huge. While there was, a lot of people, there was a lot of noise against the exhibit, there were an awful lot of people that wanted to go and see it and were very, very excited that it was there. So we got in and we saw it that night. The next day, I wasn't there. On the radio, the police had arrived to take some of the work away. I drove downtown really fast to see if I could, what I could do to help, you know, the center. The art center was actually at that point closed. Everybody who had come to see the exhibit was moved out. It was in its old location, and so the first floor of the building that it used to be in was a huge area. Was jammed with people who were yelling and yelling and yelling. They were chanting to leave the exhibit there. It was really an amazing time.
And Barbara, personally, what was your impression of the exhibit? What did you think?
Oh, he was a wonderful, wonderful photographer. And I thought, I'm old now, so I don't have a real good memory of all of the pictures. But I didn't think they were horrible in any way, shape, or form, you know.
Thank you, Barbara.
I thought they set them up very well, so if you didn't want to look at those, you didn't have to. You could just look at everything else.
Exactly.
But he was a brilliant photographer.
Thank you, Barbara. We appreciate the call.
So one of the things that we are trying to do with the symposium is to really celebrate Robert Mapplethorpe's artistic legacy and to highlight him as an artist and obviously this incredible oeuvre that he has created for us. And yes, there are some images in that oeuvre that are more challenging for some people, and they're an important part of who he was as a person and what he was interested in. But like Barbara said, he was really a brilliant photographer, and I think artists, even nowadays, are learning from him, and curators are poring over the photographs to reevaluate his status and what he's done for art history.
Kevin, what do you think Robert Mapplethorpe's legacy is?
I think his work was provocative because he was living during a very kind of conservative period, the 1980s, and there were these crises going on, the AIDS crisis, number one, and I think a lot of artists felt the need to be provocative because they wanted that position to be heard. I think it was a way to engage in politics that felt very urgent to a lot of artists at that time. And I think it may be similar to the way some artists feel today who make work about politics or social issues that they feel are not being addressed in a proper way. But I'll just say, too, something specific about the symposium next week on weekend. On Saturday afternoon at 4 p.m., we're having this thing called an oral history reception. So people just like Barbara, who just told her story, they can join the reception. They can tell their story within this banquet room at the 21C Hotel. That will be recorded. And all of that is going to become an archive that will live with the Mapplethorpe archive at the Getty in California after this is over.
And Kevin's done really a wonderful job. There's also another panel which brings together curators from the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, the Getty Institute, as well as the Guggenheim, who are all mounting and organizing major Mapplethorpe exhibitions, some for 2016, some for 2018, And so he's an artist that remains very visible. And I think that there is this now moment of reappraisal, of looking at his work again and seeing how much it matters in today's environment.
Mm-hmm. And I think maybe 25 years give us enough historic distance to reevaluate. And there's a different generation of people who, didn't live through this crisis or through the upheavals of the 80s and can really take a look from a very different perspective.
We had a call from Gabriel who said she's in Walnut Hills, and she says she saw the exhibit when she was 14, and she thought it was really cool. So I guess as far as the main part, there weren't age restrictions on getting in. It was just only that one section.
Mm-hmm. That's a good qualification. Yeah, exactly, because this is a lot of work that can be shared with very broad audiences. But you're right, there is very mature content. You know, there was a Mapplethorpe exhibition at the Grunwald Gallery at Indiana University last year that I went to go see. And you think 25 years later, oh, Mapplethorpe's going to look quaint to today's sophisticated eyes. And I can tell you, it's still challenging material. It still punches you in the face, and you're like, okay, I have to deal with this. But it is like to have that kind of resonance and that power, I think, really speaks to the nature and the resonance and the reverberations of his work.
And it's also interesting to consider that institutions made different decisions about the more challenging or provocative material. So here at the Contemporary Arts Center, people under 18 were not allowed to enter the room. At the ICA in Boston, everybody was allowed to enter the room, also children, if they were in the company of an adult. So, you know, again, every institution should have shaped their own policies and guidelines around accessibility to the material.
Rafaela, Betsy called in. She's an artist. She said that as an artist, she felt that some of the art was over the top and was offensive. I mean, I guess you got all kinds of reactions to his work, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I think there were a lot of people who were offended by it, personally offended. And, nevertheless, as an institution, it's our role if we are dealing with material that is art, not to censor particular elements of an artist's oeuvre. And that was the case with Mapplethorpe. You know, we had to show, and I think that's really important, the entire output of his artistic creation.
I think that's what we've said all along. I think even today when we mm-hmm. mount our exhibition in November, there's no requirement to love Robert Mapplethorpe. If you enter and see these exhibitions and participate in this symposium, you know, you can love it or you can hate it, but you should have the freedom to decide for yourself if you want to make that choice. And I think that's mm-hmm. ultimately what we're standing for.
Now, is this follow-up exhibit going to be provocative itself?
It will. Look, it's a different nature, so there will be some Mapplethorpe photographs, none of the sort of ex portfolio in this exhibition. But these are contemporary artists in this region responding to the legacy of Mapplethorpe. Some of them do it in a more restrained, poetic way. Some of them do it in a more graphic or explicit way. But we did want to just sort of cover that landscape and look at the spectrum of artistic responses to Mapplethorpe's influence mm-hmm. and legacy.
I'm talking with Contemporary Arts Center Director Rafaela Plato and Curator Stephen Maticio and Photo Focus Artistic Director Kevin Moore. Thanks to Elizabeth Hall for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. And let's talk with Alan in Clifton. Hi, Alan.
Hello.
You're on. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hello. I attended the show in 1990. I wasn't living in Cincinnati at the time. I had come in for a meeting, and I'd heard that there was this outrageous, provocative show of photography, and so I went to see it. Anything that's causing that much stir nationally seemed not to be missed if it was two blocks away from where I was.
Negative publicity is as good as mm-hmm. positive publicity, right, Alan?
Yeah, there is no negative publicity. People have said. My first memory was walking into the show and seeing absolutely lovely color photographs of flowers. Mm-hmm. I walked over to them and I was tremendously disappointed to find out that they were by Robert Mapplethorpe. Because I knew that I wouldn't be able to afford them. I had hoped that these were from someone else who wasn't well known and they were just there, and maybe this was something I could afford to buy. But the show at that time that I remember, there was basically a a barrier, a partial height barrier, mm-hmm. and statements that that the behind, you know, the work behind this barrier is, you know, is going to be provocative, and I think it even may have said something about sexual content or something in that nature. And I have to say that what I've heard from your speakers talking about this, people are talking around what actually those pictures were or those photographs. And, for example, there was a photograph of midsection of a man in a business suit.
Right.
That was unzipped and yeah. whose genitals were out of his fly.
Well, let's let the panel comment about this mm-hmm. too. You bring up a good point. We don't want to get too graphic about it, but you know, what these were explicit photos in some ways, right?
Very much so, and I think that, you know, like Kevin mentioned, this was sort of the community that Mapplethorpe was participating within in New York, and he wanted to give a level of visibility to this community, which very much lived in the shadows, especially on a national stage.
He was dealing a lot with sexual and racial
exactly.
stereotypes in his work anyhow.
And they are difficult, challenging images, and I don't think that's a lifestyle that, you know, is widely embraced necessarily, but he portrays it in a very classical lens, you know, and so again, there's
yeah,
these sort of...
I would just jump in here and say that these are not actually documentary pictures of these sex acts going on in mm-hmm. clubs. These are people he's met in the clubs, mm-hmm. brought them back to his studio a few days later, and they sort of reenact the activities that they were doing downstairs in whatever club, the Mine Shaft, for example, in New York City. And I think what a lot of people react to when they see the pictures, it isn't so much the sex in the pictures, the sexuality, the violence, because remember, it is sadomasochism. And so mm-hmm. there are some very sort of hard to look at violent, you know, acts occurring, but reenacted in the artist's studio in this very clean and classical posed way. And in that sense, they're very much like religious, traditional Catholic religious imagery, if you will. I mean, that's where Robert Mapplethorpe comes from. It's very much like the agony and the ecstasy mm-hmm. of St. Teresa in many depictions in art history.
And I think, Kevin, to your point that Mapplethorpe staged or restaged, let's say, gay couples or homoerotic, sadomasochistic exchanges in the studio made all of these photographs particularly theatrical because you were able to really focus on all the props that were involved. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't just, I don't know, blurred.
Yeah,
I mean, you could really look at mm-hmm. all the whips and the clothes and the mouse pieces and whatever it is. And I think at the time and even nowadays, not everybody is familiar with, you know, the props that this particular subculture is using. So it is material that is hard to look at. It certainly pushes the boundaries of what, you know, a sort of like everyday sexual activity looks like for most people. So, yeah, it was, I think, maybe eye-opening and shocking and definitely material that was very new to be considered in an artistic context.
Rafaela, what are you hoping that people will get out of the symposium and then the exhibit that's coming up on this?
I hope that Vista Symposium again will talk a lot about Mapplethorpe's artistic legacy. We are talking about how curators today approaching the vast material, you know, this vast amount of photographs that he left behind, how they are maybe repositioning or reevaluating his photographs themselves. And then with the censorship and trial panel, I think it's an opportunity to look again in a very nuanced way at what happened here in Cincinnati exactly, because there were a lot of different steps involved that I think over the course of the years everybody forgot about. So I think with that panel, we are almost laying the foundation, or not the foundation, but we are just looking at history once again, because it's happening here in Cincinnati. It's happening at the Contemporary Arts Center. So it allows us to revisit our own history and maybe what we as an institution do with that history moving forward. And, you know, obviously we continue as an institution to live up to our mission and we don't shy back to present contemporary art in its broadest form and it's in all its shapes and forms. And so, you know, there's always material that is not entirely comfortable for everybody, and we do our very, very best institutionally to make sure that we have the right signage in place, that we make sure everybody really has a choice if they want to view an exhibition or not. And, you know, all the educational programs that we build around exhibitions. But
it's going to give a more holistic and expansive view of Mapplethorpe. Mm-hmm. I think for so many in Cincinnati, he's reduced to 7 photographs, maybe
right.
even fewer.
His overall work is overshadowed.
And
perhaps.
There is complexity. Yeah. Like what Alan said, you walk in and you see these exquisitely beautiful photographs of flowers, and right. then you go and you see something very different. And this was mm-hmm. from one artist's perspective. And I think that the panels and the speakers that Kevin has put together and then the exhibition that will follow gives a much broader look at who Mapplethorpe was, the impact of his work, and how it continues to resonate and how it continues to mutate today.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, Raphael, and Kevin, thank you. Kevin, go ahead.
Thank you. I will just add that there's one panel of sort of friends and family of Mapplethorpe.
Right.
We do want to sort of remember that Mapplethorpe was a person, and he had friends and models. Mm-hmm. They will be joining us for one very interesting, hopefully gossipy panel that will try to bring to life Robert Mapplethorpe and what he was like and what he was trying to do as an artist.
Well, thanks to all of you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you, Mark, for having us.
Thank you.
Contemporary Art Center Director Raffaella Plato and Curator Stephen Maticio and Photo Focus Artistic Director and Curator Kevin Moore. Mapplethorpe Plus 25, a symposium to commemorate the 25th anniversary of Robert Mapplethorpe, The Perfect Moment, at the Contemporary Art Center is going to be held October 23rd through 24th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. at the CAC. And you can find a link to more information at wvxu.org. After the Moment, reflections on Robert Mapplethorpe will be on display at the Contemporary Arts Center November the 6th through March 13th. Coming up, if you're curious about bourbon, you don't want to miss this conversation. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.